The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play!
Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Will Levis is throwing to two former stud receivers. Maybe they still have a lot left in the tank. Keaton Mitchell averaged 8.4 yards per carry last year. You know we love that. Marvin Mims is getting an opportunity this season. Jerome Ford was a top 15 running back from weeks 2 to 17. These are some of the names that we're talking about today. These are some guys on the sleepers list. As we welcome you to Fantasy Football Today on a Monday morning. Adam Azer, Jamie Eisenberg, Heath Cummings here. What's up, guys? You know, I believe in accountability on this show.
Oh, good.
And I need to correct something that I said last week. It's been gnawing at me since Thursday. Yeah. Roadhouse was not a good movie. And I don't want to be on the record as the guy who said it was. So I apologize for that terrible, terrible assessment last week. Definitely not a good movie.
Did you not finish it?
When I had spoken to you, no. I was halfway through. And it was really good. And then Conor McGregor showed up and the whole movie just nosedived. It was so bad. It wasn't just him. It was just like everything got so stupid
so
in the second half.
What you had watched at that point, Conor McGregor was not on screen yet.
Only for a moment. I basically stopped it right after he made his entrance. And like he wasn't great, but it was just like the whole movie got so dumb after that. So I don't want to be the one who told you that Roadhouse was good. Because that would be definitely in the Heath Cummings thread of Azer terrible takes. So anyway.
I could be wrong because I don't really quite understand the distribution of movies these days. But if something goes straight to streaming, is that probably an indication that's bad?
Not necessarily. But it's not good, Jamie. It's not good. All right, let's talk about.
Well, I mean, you know, it used to be like direct to video was obviously a sign that it was not going to do well in the theaters and it was bad.
Right.
Like, is direct to streaming now? Like, we're past COVID and we're past the pandemic. Like, if it doesn't go to a theater first?
Yeah, I think no. I don't think that's what. I don't think so.
No, I think now I kind of feel like you might be right about that, but I don't know. Was that direct? I didn't even know that it was direct to streaming. That makes a lot of sense. Okay, let's talk about some sleepers. Heath, you want to give me two of your favorite sleepers as of right now, April 1st?
Yeah, and just to get this out of the way, so like, how are you defining a sleeper? I went and looked at our most recent mock draft and looked for guys who were taken after pick 100. So guys who I think are going to be better than that. And the one who stood out the most, and maybe it's unfair because it's at the quarterback position, but Kyler Murray. I still believe that Kyler Murray could be a top five fantasy quarterback, especially if he gets Marvin Harrison Jr. and he gets back to running the way that he was. This is a guy who could rush for 800, 900 yards, throw for 4,000. We've seen that type of upside before and might have one of the best wide receivers in the NFL on his team in just about, what, a month and a half or just a little less than a month. And then number two, you mentioned him, I would say Keaton Mitchell. On that Devon Achane strand, he's moved down a little bit because of the arrival of Derrick Henry, but still the incredible upside, those backs that can take, and we saw Kamara do this early in his career, can take 15 touches a game, and they're so efficient that they could turn that into top 12 production. I do think Mitchell is that type of back. It might be a second half type of the season, but we saw Breece Hall was basically an RB1 after the first month of the season coming off the ACL. So it's not impossible.
Right. Keith Mitchell with the ACL injury. That was in December. So a late injury for him. And Kyler Murray, yeah, it's weird. It's like, is anybody going to have the guts? Not you, but in the entire industry, is anybody going to rank Kyler Murray as a top six quarterback? I think maybe after the NFL draft, but he's shown that he can be that, as you said, Heath. You know, it's gotten easier
because we're less excited about Trevor Lawrence. Justin Herbert fell behind him. Like, it might just take a couple more guys moving down, but no, he won't be a sleeper anymore if we start ranking him as a top six quarterback. The beauty of Kyler Murray right now is the top five upside, maybe even top three upside, at the cost of QB 10.
Right, but
to rank him top six, you have to value him more than either one of Dak Prescott or Joe Burrow, which isn't happening. I don't think he's going to get drafted ahead of CJ Stroud. And then I think he's in that mix, fairly so, with Anthony Richardson, Brock Purdy, Jordan Love. You know, so that's, I think, where he's going to live, top 10.
Well, I don't think he's going to go ahead of Burrow, but you think Dak Prescott is in the public's perception?
And he's not going to go ahead of Burrow, but it's not unjust. Like, would I be surprised if Kyler Murray had a better season than Joe Burrow next year? Not really.
No.
Right. I mean, there's definitely the potential for it to happen. But I'm talking about being drafted. I don't think he's getting drafted ahead of those guys.
Yeah. So Kyler, you know, for basically, he's another guy where he's had these partial games, including one game he played three snaps towards ACL, and it really hurts his per game finish. But, you know, for 2020, I believe it was, maybe, yeah, I think it was 2020, the first nine games of the year, he was the number one quarterback in fantasy. Then he sprained his AC joint and his season went south. And he's been, you know, for full seasons, he's had 2 years where he's finished as a top seven guy. But anyway, when he's had a great receiver, he's just been phenomenal. But let me paint this scenario. We'll move on from Kyler after this. They got the fourth pick in the draft. So many people have been saying for so long, Marvin Harrison to the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. What if they trade out from there? And what if they don't end up with one of the top three receivers? What if it's Brian Thomas or something like that instead of Harrison, Odunze, Neighbors for the Arizona Cardinals? Would you he'd still be a sleeper, but would you think he'd still have top five upside, Kyler?
Yes, because he still has, in my opinion, an elite playmaker at a thin position in Trey McBride. And I do think that the thing about this draft class is, yes, it's top heavy at wide receiver, but it's very deep at receiver. And so are we going to see, and you know, you can make all the jokes you want, a Tank Dell, a Puka Nacua, you know, somebody to that level. No, it's hard to expect that. But we also, you know, we had a draft class a few years ago where, think about where Brandon Ayuk and Justin Jefferson were drafted, you know, back end of the first round, you know, so it doesn't necessarily have to be the first guy or two coming off the board to be the best of the group. And so you mentioned one in Thomas, you know, there's going to be, you know, a handful of others that go in the second round. And so they may end up with two of those guys, you know, especially depending on the draft capital that comes back to them in the trade that they make. So they may trade down and still get Odunze. They may trade down and get Thomas. They may trade down, you know, miss out on what everybody's considering, you know, the one and the 1A, if you want to put it in that category of Harrison and Neighbors. And they still may have a very good receiving core. You know, we spent the time with Jake Seeley, and I agree, Michael Wolf, intrigue. Greg Dortch will make plays. Trey McBride obviously will make plays. He'll make plays with his legs. And so I'm not going to view Kyler. I'm not going to drop Kyler because he doesn't get one of the top two or three guys. I'm only going to like him that much more if he does.
Yeah, for the value, right. All right. Jamie, how about a couple of your favorite sleepers?
Yeah, one is somewhat obvious, but that's Chase Brown. You know, he's going to be somebody I draft quite a bit of. I've done it now two of the three drafts I think we've done in the last month. And just excited about the opportunity. You know, I think Zach Moss is going to get the first crack at it. That makes a lot of sense, you know, bringing him in. Zach Taylor talked about, you know, how he's a fit for their scheme because they do a lot of running out of shotgun. It's something he's done well in Buffalo and in Indianapolis. But I'm always going to skew toward, in the case of a situation like this where it's not an established guy, let's say like a Derrick Henry coming in, you know, it's a guy that I still think needs to prove himself in Moss, because when he had this opportunity before in Buffalo, he flopped as the starter, couldn't stay healthy. And so, you know, Cincinnati, are they signing him based on basically a five-game stretch? That could be the case. But know, I think they like the fit. But in any case, I think the situation for Chase Brown sets up that he could be the best running back in Cincinnati, and he's somebody that I want to have on a lot of my fantasy rosters.
And he couldn't make Heath's list because he went 99th in our draft.
Not a sleeper.
one more that you want to talk about, Jamie?
Another guy that I draft a lot of, you know, and I hate to, you know, expect an injury, but is Elijah Mitchell. You know, in the event that there is an injury in San Francisco, he's going to be a very prominent fantasy option and someone that will be a must-start guy. I mean, we saw it in his rookie campaign when Raheem Mostert got hurt, and he was the guy for the 49ers for the majority of that season. And obviously, you know, the system's great. He's at least as of now, the second guy on the depth chart. And so McCaffrey's coming off a season where he had a ton of work, and he's getting to that point in terms of age where you have to be a little bit concerned. Now, nobody is saying he's going to fall off if he stays healthy, or expect him to fall off if he stays healthy. I mean, it could obviously happen, but we're clearly ranking him as the best player in fantasy. But obviously the next man up is somebody that you want to have on your team. So he keeps falling to a spot where anytime he's available, I draft him. And very interested to see what would happen if he does get a chance to start. Let's use Dave's, you know, analogy of McCaffrey wins the lottery. Elijah Mitchell is potentially a top 10 caliber running back.
I don't want, if Christian McCaffrey won the lottery, do you think he'd retire? I don't even think he would. I think he'd just keep playing.
He's pretty much won the lottery in life.
Right now, I mean, right? Yeah.
Everything about his life is very fantastic.
I wouldn't mind being Christian McCaffrey. I want to know, Jamie, just going back to Chase Brown, who you took 99th overall. You took him ahead of Chuba Hubbard and Zach Charbonnet and Gus Edwards.
You're talking about which draft? A PPR draft?
Yeah.
Because half post, PPR, you drafted him.
Post-free agency, I think it's PPR.
Yes, because remember I told you it happened in the half PPR one. I was debating two guys we already talked about. It was Kyler Murray or Chase Brown. I didn't have a quarterback. Two teams behind me had quarterback, did not have quarterbacks. And so it was killing me not to take Chase Brown and just say, okay, I'll figure out the quarterback situation. But I was like, let me just do something smart for change. And I'll take the quarterback and guarantee myself some quality production there.
Well, a couple of things that are a little troubling here. One thing that's troubling. I do want to know why you took Chase Brown over Charbonnet and Gus Edwards and Chuba Hubbard. But also, this league, this post-free agency mock draft, this is a league that, you know, Jamie set up the draft, but it was a draft that we also did the year before as a mock draft. So he just used the same league. I went, and we didn't play it out or anything, but I went 0-12-1 in that league last year. We never made any roster moves or anything. Just we drafted in March. And
well, the funny thing is that I think I told you that I went 15-0 in that league.
Yeah.
And the only reason I saw it was because when you open up a league that you haven't touched, and if it's still set up, I was playing RJ White in the championship game and I won. And so I was like, oh, let me go look at my roster. And I saw when I opened up my roster page, I was 15-0. And it was because I had Josh Allen, Christian McCaffrey, Mike Evans. There was another big time receiver there. Ayuk, maybe. I don't remember. It was a very stacked roster.
Yeah, well, I didn't do very well. All right, we got to take a break, though, and we'll find out why Chase Brown went ahead of another sleeper in Chuba Hubbard. He's on Heath's list, a starting running back right now in Gus Edwards, and a big upside guy in Zach Charbonnet. We'll be right back on Fantasy Football Today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bull & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bull & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I will just wrap up our thoughts on these early sleepers here, a couple from each of Jamie and Heath, a couple of their favorites. Yeah, so Chase Brown going ahead of Chuba Hubbard, who looks like a starting running back right now. Gus Edwards, same thing. Zach Charbonnet, not a starting running back, but maybe a similar situation to Chase Brown. Why'd you take Brown over those three?
Well, I think there's more upside for Brown if he becomes the starter for the Bengals than there is for those other guys. Charbonnet is a very good comparison, but I feel more comfortable in terms of Ken Walker as the starter by comparison to Zach Moss. So in the case of Chase Brown, I don't think it's necessarily going to be an injury that allows him to be the starter. I think in the case of Charbonnet, it would probably be an injury that he would need to become the full-time guy. I don't think Kenneth Walker is going to the bench. So again, apples to apples. If you're telling me that the starting running back for the Panthers or starting running back for the Bengals, I think Chase Brown's got more upside than potentially both guys there in Carolina if Miles Sanders is done. But in the case of Chuba Hubbard, I think Brown's got more upside. And then in terms of Gus Edwards, when we did the draft, it was right after free agency. We'll see if they potentially sign J.K. Dobbins, if that takes them out of drafting a rookie. I still would probably expect that to happen because of how Harbaugh wants to build his roster. Mostly a day two guy, Blake Corum. But in the case of Edwards right now, he feels like a stopgap as opposed to a full-time guy for the majority of the season.
Cool. All right. News and notes. Police are looking for Rashee Rice in connection to a car accident. It was a major car accident and reports that he may have been drag racing. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah. I mean, we did get the update from Josina last night that Rice has retained counsel, which I would assume means that the police know that also that he has retained counsel. They're probably not not like there's an active warrant out for him or anything.
No, okay, so they're probably not looking for him anymore. So I should have updated that. Sorry, but big car accident, maybe racing, and I don't want to speculate or anything. We don't know, but that's what's going on with Rashee Rice. Dallas could be interested in bringing Ezekiel Elliott back. Tank Dell had a setback in his recovery, may not be ready for training camp, Heath. How much does that change the calculus for Stroud if Dell's not ready?
A little bit.
Oh, April Fools! April Fools!
Great job.
So I did not think you were going to go along with it. I thought you were going to be like, what? I didn't hear that. Sorry.
Well, I didn't hear it. I made the face like, oh. Yeah. But you have things in the notes that I didn't hear about all the time.
you would have got me too, because I didn't know that happened, or didn't think that happened either. But
it didn't. Right. Tank Dell is fine. I used to do that.
That's
with
just baseball. Cruel.
Yeah, I used to do that with baseball all the time. I would say like somebody would get Tommy John or something, and I had to do something for April Fools, you know. So April Fools, Tank Dell is fine. No worries. The Jets acquired edge rusher Hassan Reddick from the Eagles for...
Oh, you're going to get so much bleep for that.
Yeah, 2026 third-round pick could become a second-round pick. The Dolphins added a year to Raheem Mostert's contract. Christian Watson has been working with a special lab to address his hamstring injuries. It's weird. I want to draft Christian Watson, but...
See, this feels like an April Fool's thing.
Right, I was going to say.
A special lab.
It's a dog, actually. It's like a chocolate lab who heals hamstrings. I love Watson, but can you trust him? Who's your top-ranked Packers receiver right now?
Jaden
Reed. But I do think Watson falls in the category of what we're talking about because of just where he'll end up getting drafted. You could almost put all three non-Jaden Reed Packers in this category because they're all going to be potentially in the mix to be very good. You know, Dontayvion Wicks, Romeo Doubs, Christian Watson, all three of them.
Some reviews about my April Fool's joke. Suspiciously good at lying. I'm actually a terrible liar. So it's not like, yeah, bad liar. Michael Penix Jr. ran a 4.5 40 at his pro day. And he's going to be interesting because he's got such injury history. Will he be a first round pick? What do you think? Michael Penix Jr.? Would you mock him in the first round? What?
I think he will definitely be a first round pick.
I think those medicals are very concerning. It would be the only reason he wasn't a first round pick. But we will see. And Kansas City is signing a rugby player, Louis Rees-Zamet, to be a running back or a wide receiver.
Maybe a kick return specialist.
Right. Right. Yeah. You know, we actually have an email about this, about Louis Rees-Zamet.
Yeah, apparently he's really good at throwing like 40-yard laterals. And so they think that with the new kickoff rules, that Andy Reid's going to design some plays for him to sprint to one sideline and throw it to the other side.
Would you like to read the fantasy cops about him now or later?
Well, we're here right now, so let's just read it.
All right. Fantasy cops from Dustin. Okay. We have a bit of a league dispute in light of the Louis Rees-Zamet signing with the Chiefs. Currently, our league app default setting, I had him as a rookie. Okay, no. The league app default setting I had, why do you say I? He's a rookie and is thus locked until the rookie draft. Mm-hmm. I contend this is wrong. This is the wrong default setting, and I'm interested in your thoughts. Rees-Zamet will not be in the 2024 NFL draft, like, you know, Marvin Harrison and Malik Nabers and Odunze, and those players can't currently sign with an NFL team, but clearly Rees-Zamet could. He was a free agent in the international player pathway. I believe that should be the default on fantasy football apps, him being a free agent instead of a rookie and locked. My league commissioner agreed and added him to my team because I asked first after being unable to add him due to the setting. Some of our league mates disagree with the decision and are making the he is a rookie argument, which I consider a lazy argument. Just looking for your thoughts and asking if apps should reconsider the default setting or what leagues should do surrounding the situation. It'll be more prominent in the years ahead as more players transition to the NFL as the NFL strives to expand worldwide. What do you think, Heath?
I mostly agree with the rookie designation, but I understand the argument for the free agent designation. And if you wanted to do that, I think it's fine. I just think giving him to the guy who asked the commissioner first is probably a bad process, and you should have a fab run where he's available and everyone can choose how much they want to bid on him.
It's also one of those things. So I take it his league's allowed to make transactions throughout right. the offseason. And so if that's the case, then if there is no fab and if it's just waivers, then it should go through a waivers process too. No, not necessarily fab. So if he's first on waivers, then that's a different story. But if he's not first on waivers, then shouldn't just be allowed to get him without any sort of, without anybody else getting the opportunity to do so. But the easiest thing is just to lock transactions until the draft, and then he has to get drafted.
Okay. There you go. A couple of perspectives there on the player that everyone's talking about, Louis Rees-Zamet. And let's go to Heath Sleeper. Oh, wait, before we go to Heath Sleepers, go to Heath's Dynasty show, FFT Dynasty. Check it out. Great content there. We did a startup Superflex mock draft. You're going to get NFL draft talk on it. Fantasy Football Today Dynasty. Listen wherever you're listening to this podcast.
Heath's- See, but that's just, you're 100% right. They, people should go listen to the show, but they can't go there first when the show is tomorrow and the sleepers are today.
What do you mean?
You said before we go to Heath Sleepers, go to Heath Dynasty show first.
Well, fine. Fine, fine, fine. Okay, Heath Sleepers, Kyler Murray. Is one
go
of
to his. Go to Sleepers first.
And Keaton Mitchell is one of them. Will Levis is a sleeper for you. Did you even consider drafting him in a one quarterback league? He did not get drafted in the draft I'm looking at.
Yeah, he's. I would consider drafting him in a one quarterback league if I waited until the double digit rounds and ended up with Kyler Murray or somebody like that. What happens almost always in our mock drafts is we get to round four or five and one of Mahomes or Lamar or Allen's available still. And so I just take them. But yeah, if I had waited at quarterback and I was taking two, I think he's the type of guy with the gunslinger mentality and the combination of Ridley and Hopkins and the rushing touchdown potential for not like huge upside, but some upside that could sneak into the bottom half of the top 12. So I do like pairing him up with another guy outside of the top 20. He's my number. I think he's my QB 17 right now.
Will Levis.
I almost think it's almost beneficial to do it no matter what kind of quarterback you take, unless it's an injury prone guy. And that's the second quarterback you're looking at, but you could still take a Mahomes or Allen type of quarterback. And if Will Levis hits, depending on how your league is with trades, like he could have a lot of trade value, you know, if he starts to become that guy. And, you know, we saw the upside in the one game against Atlanta last year when, you know, DeAndre Hopkins went nuts. You throw in the receiving core that they have, maybe a suspect run game, but an improved offensive line and play caller and all those things. There's a lot to love about Will Levis. So, yeah, I totally agree.
All right, we got Chuba Hubbard and Keaton Mitchell at running back. Are you buying the idea that Chuba Hubbard could just be their starting running back all year?
Not in a, like, clear number one, but in a 1A role, I think it's certainly possible. We'll find out more after the draft, of course, but and it's also like you put Miles Sanders on this list and he's going later. So because it is a new coaching staff and we've seen that running back situations can change even if the same two guys are there when the coaching changes. But yeah, I think it's possible that Chuba Hubbard could have 220 touches next year.
So I asked Dave Canales at the owners meetings about his running backs. And when he talked about Hubbard, he said, it's on the site. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but it was some to the effect of he has the running style that we love or like, or something like that. But he did say that he's looking forward to getting his hands on both the guys, Sanders and Hubbard, and seeing how it's going to work. And I said, do you have any idea of potential workload? And the first thing he said was competition, you know? So I think he's going to let it play out. Obviously, Hubbard was, you know, not significantly better, but from a fantasy points per game, better, almost double of what Sanders did a year ago. And so you would think he gets the opportunity to be the starter going in, even though Sanders was the one they paid last season. So I almost think they both fall in this category because, you know, this is one of those, as you used the phrase with Ben Gresh last week, ambiguous backfields where, you know, you can draft potentially both guys with, you know, Hubbard should go, I would say maybe as early as round 8, you know, but potentially double-digit rounds as well. Sanders is definitely going to be one of those late-round picks because everybody was pissed off after what happened a year ago. And it's going to be an improved offense, an improved offensive line. You know, you may not get one guy standing out significantly above the other because they'll probably mix and match them. But, you know, an injury occurs and then you have, you know, a borderline RB2 or maybe just a high-end flex. But there's a lot to like about, you know, getting both these guys just in a refresh situation.
Okay. And at receiver, we've got Curtis Samuel. Sorry, just finishing my running back note there. All right, you got Curtis Samuel and DeMario Douglas for wide receiver here. And what do you think about these guys? Do they have any upside? Or are we just looking at like bi-week replacement type of players?
Well, they have huge upside relative to where they're going to be drafted. We've seen a second wide receiver function as a borderline number two in the Bills offense. And we saw like some problems with Stephon Diggs down the stretch last year. We don't know who the Bills are going to add as their wide receiver three or wide receiver two, and Samuel will be the wide receiver three, but he has a really special skill set after the catch. And so if they put him into that Cole Beasley type role, I think he could do more with those catches, with those catches if he can stay healthy.
Jamie, you've been a big Khalil Shakir guy. So how much does Curtis Samuel affect that for you? It seems like my perception is that it's bothering other people more than it's bothering you in terms of Shakir.
Yeah, I want to see what happens in camp. I mean, you know, the relationship with Joe Brady is not exactly the most encouraging thing. And Brandon Bean, the GM, also has a history with Curtis Samuel. So, you know, there's familiarity there. But I still think that they're not going to forget about Khalil Shakir. And so, you know, we'll see, like he said, are they going to bring in another receiver, you know, via the draft? You know, are they still going to maybe explore trade? Because I don't think they have their long-term number one guy on the roster right now, because Stephon Diggs clearly is not going to be there maybe even after the season. So do they get very aggressive and maybe try and swing a big trade, let's say, for T. Higgins? But most likely the receiving core is going to look like it looks right now, with the addition of, you know, maybe a high profile rookie, maybe more of a, you know, second or third tier type of guy, but they're also very invested in their tight end group. You know, that's something that Sean McDermott talked about when he was asked about his receiving core. He said, you know, I'm putting Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox in that room of the receiving core. So in terms of the pecking order for targets, I would hope, because I think we all have a lot more invested in Kincaid, that Kincaid's two, and then the tight ends, and then the rest of the receiving core kind of shakes itself out. So I'm not going to necessarily rule out that Samuel is automatically better than Khalil Shakir entering his third season, coming off a strong finish, caught everything that was thrown to him. So Josh Allen has to have some sort of, you know, love for what that kid was able to accomplish. And so we'll see how it all sort of breaks down. But yes, Curtis Samuel coming is a damper on the ceiling for Shakir, and certainly, you know, takes it from an easy guy to target with a late round pick to more of a, okay, I'll take a chance on one of the two guys and see how it sort of plays out.
Would you guys rather have Curtis Samuel, Demario Douglas, or a guy who's on Jamie's sleepers list and who Jake Seeley talked about last week, Josh Downs for the Colts?
Depending on what the Patriots do, it would be Douglas, Downs, Bills guy.
I think that probably sounds right, yeah.
What is it that you like about
New England's receiving core right now is awful.
So I was going to say, what is it you like about Demario Douglas over Downs? Just opportunity?
He could be the number one wide receiver on his team. And we don't exactly know what the Patriots are going to do, but it sure seems like they'd like to keep doing what they've been doing. So I do think there's a potential that he's like that prototypical Patriots slot wide receiver that just sees an enormous target share because they don't really have anybody else to throw to. Now, they do like Kendrick Bourne also. And so maybe Kendrick Bourne out targets him, but I'd rather bet on the young guy. And Douglas looked pretty good in the second half of last season. So he probably is a guy that turns into more of a number three unless he happens to score touchdowns. But they could be in a position to add a good rookie quarterback, and this offense could be much improved from last year.
That's the thing. It's like, what's the game plan at receiver for them? You know, and they, you know, Jerod Mayo talked about this. He's like, you know, they kind of whiffed on free agency. You know, he said it was important to them to bring back, you know, some guys that were, you know, their own free agents, you know, so Kendrick Bourne, Hunter Henry, you know, that was seemingly a priority to keep those guys on the roster. But, you know, that unless they decide to go with, you know, Jacoby Brissett and maybe trade back into the back end of the first round, or hoping that they can get a Bo Nix if they do decide to take a receiver at four and surprise us a little bit, as opposed to taking the quarterback there, or three, excuse me, taking the quarterback there, then we could be looking at a much better receiving core, but just a terrible quarterback situation. You know, it's not that Jacoby Brissett won't be good for whatever fantasy options there, because we've seen that at times during his career. But obviously, I think the best case scenario, if you're in the Demario Douglas camp, is draft a quarterback, don't spend a lot of capital at wide receiver, and then Douglas does have the chance to sort of become this guy, as Heath talked about.
Yeah, I think the best case scenario is that Washington takes McCarthy or Jaden Daniels and you get Drake May with no significant competition at a wide receiver. And then I think it could be like maybe he does have borderline top 24 upside.
All right. And then a couple of tight ends on Heath's sleepers list, Jake Ferguson and Dalton Schultz.
And there's not too like I don't think these guys have the potential to be a lot better than they were last year. It's just a good reminder that Jamie's great or late tight end strategy is still very much in play this year. There's a lot of tight ends available after pick 100. And I would expect that Ferguson and Schultz are both going to be low end starters, guys that you probably don't even stream. Like if you draft those guys, you might draft a second one and hope one of them hits big, but I would expect Ferguson or Schultz is just going to stick in your lineup the rest of the year. And you don't have to think about it.
Especially now that Tank Dell's out for the season.
Right.
Right.
There's been a lot of agreement on today's show. I would say the only player on your list that I didn't agree with was Schultz. And that's just because I just don't think there's enough for him if Dell and Collins are healthy and as good as we think they are. In the seven game, there were seven games where both of them played at least 60% of the snaps. And in those seven games, Dalton Schultz was on pace for only 83 targets, 56 catches, 617 yards, 7 touchdowns on 83 targets.
And that is what we have to expect, is that Schultz is going to be the red zone guy, the touchdown guy, that if CJ Stroud takes a step forward as a passer this year, Schultz might have 90 targets. He might also have 10 touchdowns.
I would say, you know, looking at the tight end rank list right now, I think we'll probably all put Bowers, if he's in the right situation, ahead of those two guys. At least I know I don't speak for anybody else, but just based on the upside. Once you get past those two tight ends, especially now that the Bears have a crowded receiving core, like Cole Kmet's value is a little bit less. Can you really trust Mayer or Musgrave, knowing that there's potentially two tight ends for the Packers that are maybe going to cannibalize each other a little bit? There's not a lot of sleeper tight ends right now that are out there, you know? So you can look at like a Davis Allen if you feel like he's going to be the best Rams guy, with Higbee going on the pup list based on what Sean McVay said. You know, maybe the change in Seattle opens the opportunity for Noah Fant to now become something that's hard to trust. You know, Greg Dulcich, that's hard to trust. You know, so the guys that once upon a time had some upside, you know, so it really feels like there's about 14 tight ends that you're looking at in a 12-team league, and Ferguson and Schultz are at the tail end of that. But they've kind of shown their hand. You know, Dallas's tight end has been the same, essentially, from Jason Witten to Dalton Schultz to Jay Ferguson. It's almost the same type of production across the board. And Schultz has kind of been the same guy now in two different teams over four seasons. So it's hard to overlook that.
I'll give you two tight end sleepers. One of them may not even play next year. I think Darren Waller, if he comes back, is a low end, you know, in the same group. And then I don't really think, I just want to get your take on this. There's absolutely no evidence, but here's the thing about tight ends, especially second year tight ends. They often come out of nowhere, and we get about half of the top six tight ends over the last 6 or 7 years. I don't have the stat in front of me. Were drafted in like round 10 or later. Michael Mayer. This is a guy with a good pedigree, right? Like, what do you think about Michael Mayer?
I just feel like they're going to run it 75 times a game, and Devontae Adams is going to have a 40% target share. But other than that, I think athleticism wise and talent wise, he's a good selection. The other one I'd throw in is Pat Freiermuth. Like, he might be the number two target on the team, and he's got Arthur Smith. Like, could be good.
Yeah. Yes, he definitely benefited with the Deontay Johnson trade. That's a good one. You know, so there are guys, you know, I guess I shouldn't dismiss it, but, you know, I think when you talk about if we said draft Will Levis as a second quarterback, there's a good chance to draft two tight ends if you miss on one of the top tier guys to take a Ferguson Mayer combination, a, you know, Schultz Musgrave combination. You know, there's still potential there for one of those guys to hit.
Let's take a break, and we'll look at Jamie's sleepers when we come back. Dave gave us a list of sleepers as well. He wasn't able to make the show, but we'll try to read his as well. We have talked about Chase Brown, a little bit of Josh Downs as well, and who was the – oh, Elijah Mitchell. So we'll talk more of Jamie's sleepers after this break on Fantasy Football Today.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
So how's your bracket, fellas?
Not as bad as Dave's, so feel good.
I'm ahead of both my son and my wife, so... Doing okay. Now, very, very middle of the pack, but I did pick Purdue to beat UConn in the championship. So, like, I could make a move towards respectability.
In our family, our cousins bracket that I do, I'm done. I was eliminated with the Tennessee loss yesterday. My wife lost her entire finals. I don't think she has a single final. Oh, no, she's Purdue. But she did so well in the first three rounds that she still could win if NC State and Alabama win. If they meet in the championship, then she would win, because nobody has that final. So I'm rooting for them. This NC State thing is insane. Like, they've got to be one of the worst Final Four teams in a long time. But holy cow, they're playing great. Good for them. I'm all about it. Although, God, like a Purdue-UConn. Imagine the difference in just excitement level for Purdue-UConn.
I just don't know if anybody can play with UConn.
It's really fascinating that an ACC school makes the Final Four, a year after another surprise ACC school makes the Final Four, and you're crapping on that one.
Miami was a 5 seed. Miami beat...
Seeds are irrelevant at this point, no. Outside of the top.
Miami was really good last year. NC State was not even going to be an at-large team. They won their conference tournament. They won, what, 5 games in 5 days? I think they were the lowest seed ever to win the ACC tournament. They have... Good for them. I mean, I'm rooting for them. Like, I think it's great. But they've got to be one of the worst. Like, for a team that wasn't even supposed to be in the tournament, it wasn't even going to be an at-large bid to be in the Final Four.
The big man battle on Saturday night is going to be spectacular.
Oh, Edie's going to destroy him. I'd like to see DJ Burns, like, in a 3 technique, though, to see what that would look like.
Yeah. Edie's ridiculous. Okay, let's get Jamie's sleepers here. So we'll cross Chase Brown and Elijah Mitchell off the list. Jerome Ford. So you have some Jerome Ford stats here somewhere. I think he was the number 13 running back in fantasy from weeks 2 through 17. Week 1, Nick Chubb played. Week 18, they kind of sat their starters. So number 13 running back overall, but about 20th per game from weeks 2 through 17, Jerome Ford. And that was with Kareem Hunt having a pretty significant role and Kareem Hunt getting almost all of the goal line work too. Anyway, we know Nick Chubb is coming back, but we know he's coming back from a major injury. What are your thoughts on Jerome Ford?
I mean, you said it. You know, he was very good last year. He's on a team that's still going to be very good offensively. The situation for him may be very good early in the season, and who knows how things unfold for Chubb based on how the recovery goes. But in any case, you know, he's not an afterthought by any stretch, but I think more people are going to get excited about Nick Chubb coming back. I mean, we've had several discussions on this show already about when should he be drafted? How high should he be on Chubb? You know, he's still going to be, you know, we've seen this comment a lot, still going to be elite because he's one of the best running backs in football. And I hope that's the case. But 28, going to be 29, coming back from that type of surgery where he had MCL surgery at first, then the ACL surgery, you know, later in the year after getting hurt in week 2, who knows when he'll be ready to go, you know, or be ready to go at full strength. So I think there'll be some moments for Ford while Chubb is working his way back. And who knows how the rest of the year will go. But he's somebody that I will draft a lot of because I think he could end up still being the best running back in Cleveland because I'm very pessimistic about Chubb being back to form at this point in his career.
Right, but what if Chubb just plays? You know, what if he's not even that good? Are they going to bench him? You know what I mean? It's like I feel like Ford can only hit if Chubb is on the pup list or gets hurt again.
It's a fair point. And we, you know, we'll have to see it play out. But we've seen Chubb lose playing time to Kareem Hunt when he was at his peak. So, you know, Stefanski, I think, will hopefully do the best thing for his team, not necessarily the best thing for a guy who's been, you know, a pretty good fixture in the franchise, a pillar of the franchise. But if Nick Chubb can't get the job done because he's not right, I would imagine he goes to Jerome Ford. And you got to factor in Deontay Foreman, too. You know, he's part of this backfield, too. But I think Ford will end up being, for a stretch of the season, the best running back in Cleveland, whether that's because Chubb's on the pup list or because he's just not effective.
Trio of wide receivers that Jamie put on his sleepers list. Jameson Williams, Marvin Mims, and Josh Downs. So, yeah, these are fun names here. Is that how you rank them? Jameson Williams, Marvin Mims, Josh Downs?
No. Williams, Downs, Mims.
Doing a Google search right now. Is NC State the worst Final Four team ever? They can't be. Wasn't like Loyola Chicago one? Did they make the Final Four one?
Well, I mean, Larinaga's team to get
George
there
Mason.
First.
George Mason, yeah, yeah. Anyway, okay, so how do you rank them again? I wasn't listening.
I haven't ranked Jameson Williams, Josh Downs, and Marvin Mims.
And how many of them do you think should be top 100 picks?
If the Lions don't add a receiver, I think Jameson Williams should absolutely be a top 100 pick, and Downs is not far behind that.
Yeah, Williams went in round 8. Josh Downs went around 11 in our draft, and Mims went a little bit after Downs. He went the first pick of round 12. Heath, what's your read on these three?
I agree with the order of ranking. I was a pretty big Mims guy coming out of school. I lost a lot of faith in Sean Payton last year, and maybe it was all Russ's fault. But now, like, what's the plan at quarterback? And do I really believe that even if he likes Marvin Mims as much as he's talking about it, he's going to give him more than three or four targets per game? So I'm sour on Marvin Mims, but I like the player. I think that the upside is still absolutely there. Jameson Williams is the one guy who you can still kind of hold on to that belief that if everything broke right, he might be a league winner at the cost.
I hope Marvin Mims becomes more than just a deep threat. That's what he was, but now they have a void to fill with Jerry Jeudy on the Browns. Jameson Williams, we just, you know, one thing I meant to look up was his snap counts. You know, has he ever really been, let's see what his snap counts were last year. He never even reached 70%. So until the playoffs. And he crushed it in the playoffs. He had 79 yards in three games. Obviously didn't do well, but he 72% was the most highest percentage of snaps he played in any game. Josh Reynolds gone, obviously. You could probably expect a wide receiver to be added for the Lions. Let's see where Jameson Williams went and compare him to some of these players. So in round eight, he went ahead of, he went right after, oddly enough, Courtland Sutton and Jerry Jeudy and Christian Watson. So Watson, Sutton, Jeudy, Jameson Williams, and Heath took Watson. I took Sutton, and then we had Jeudy and Jameson. Jamie, how do you feel about that group of Christian Watson, Courtland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, Jameson Williams?
I like him better than Jeudy at this point. You know, that might be a mistake, but I think there's such a crowded receiving core in Cleveland that it's hard for Jeudy to ascend to the heights that maybe Williams can, given the situation in Detroit. He takes that offense to a different level if he can ever become the player that he's capable of, because they have an alpha in St. Brown. They obviously have a tight end on the rise in Laporta. They have two running backs that can do a variety of things, but they don't really have a field stretcher that can be consistent. And so will he ever become more than just sort of a gadget slash, you know, throw a couple, you know, fly patterns to? I don't know. I think he can. But this is a big offseason for him. It's a big year for him. You know, going into year three after, you know, basically missing his rookie campaign and then the gambling situation and all that, how that all unfolded. So he needs a big season. And it's there for him, given Jared Goff's ability to, you know, get multiple guys going. We saw that in Los Angeles with Woods and Kupp. I think the play caller is excellent in Ben Johnson's thing. So there's a lot to love about the situation for Jameson Williams, and hopefully it pans out.
All right, I'm good with that. Those are some sleepers. We have Dave's sleepers as well. Did we talk about Schaefer's comment?
Oh, it's correct comment?
Incorrect in every sense. If you want to, Schaefer, do you want to come on and say what you said, and I'll dissect every reason why it's wrong?
I said in the private chat that the Giants won the Super Bowl as wild card teams. I think what they were like 9-7 both seasons, and they went on the run. So were they the best team in those seasons? No. It was just about the hottest team getting hot at the end of the season. That's what sports is about.
So this is an NC State comparison. Okay, so let's talk about why you're wrong. Number one, they were the wild card in only one of those two seasons. They did win their division and hosted the Atlanta Falcons in the 2000s.
With how many wins?
I don't know what their record was, but they won their division. They weren't a wild card team.
Like 9-7.
Oh, wait, so NC State won their conference, right?
In the postseason, yes, not in the regular season.
Oh, still the same.
After the 2007 season when they beat the Patriots, the Giants actually were really good. We didn't realize how great they were. They were 10-1 the following year, and then Plaxico Burress shot himself in the leg, and their season spiraled. But they actually were becoming a fantastic team with like the best defensive line in football. 2011, they probably weren't as good.
Are you talking about the year after they won the Super Bowl, they were becoming a fantastic team?
I mean, during their Super Bowl run.
NC State might be a fantastic team next year.
They won't be. During their Super Bowl run, the Giants, we didn't realize how good they were, but they had come together, and they carried it into the next year. But just first and foremost, they were not a wild card team both years. So right off the bat, you were wrong, Schaefer. NC State is terrible.
But they played on wild card weekend. They didn't have a bye week.
Correct. Yeah, but like not that many teams have buys, but yes, they played on wild card.
Well, back then, and they did go 10-6, so 9-7 and 10-6.
A 10-6 is a nice year. That's a nice year.
What's NC State's win percentage this year?
Now or before the ACC tournament? I mean, they were 9-11 in their conference. They were sub 500 in their conference. A conference that stunk, by the way. Like ACC was awful this year. They had what, five teams make it? And one of them was one of the worst additions to the field ever in Virginia. So NC State was a bad team. They bad. Never would have made it if they didn't win the championship. But they're playing great. Like I said, I'm not trying to hate on them. I'm rooting for them, but they suck.
Like okay. You're, I mean, it makes sense you're rooting for them. You've been a Giants fan.
You know, I'm also a Yankees fan, Heath, and we're 4-0. We just swept the Astros on the road. So, anywho, Dave's sleepers. Agree or disagree with Dave's sleepers? I'll just bring them up here. Dave, who are your sleepers? Kendre Miller, Jaleel McLaughlin, Roschon Johnson, and Antonio Gibson at running back. Kendre Miller, Jaleel McLaughlin, Roschon Johnson, Antonio Gibson.
I like the Miller call. He was one of the ones I was going to suggest if Dave didn't get to it first, and Jaleel McLaughlin as well. You know, I mean, you look at the situation. Heath mentioned this with Marvin Mims. Can you trust anything with Sean Payton right now? And it seemed as if he was waiting for someone to take the job from Javonte Williams last year. And McLaughlin had some moments. We'll see if he could be sustainable, but he's somebody I think right now, you know, I know Samaje Perine's still on the roster, but McLaughlin could end up, you know, taking a big piece of the action there. And then Miller is just behind an aging running back in Alvin Kamara. As we talked about with Jake Seeley, like there's certainly a situation where Jamal Williams falls further down on the depth chart and Miller gets more of an opportunity. He had a very incomplete rookie season, dealt with a lot of injuries, never got the chance to really showcase himself, but there's a lot to like about the skill set and the potential. So those are two guys that I'm totally on board with. Roschon, look, we'll see what the Bears running back core looks like post-draft and maybe as we get closer to the season. If all three guys are there, it's hard to expect Johnson to do better than he did as a rookie, which we, you know, spent a lot of time talking about the opportunity and potential playing behind Khalil Herbert. Unfortunately, he suffered a concussion when Herbert had the ankle injury, so we saw too much of Deontay Foreman during that three-game stretch. And look, Gibson has never really turned into the guy that we've hoped for. I don't see that necessarily happening in New England unless there's a Ramondre Stevenson injury. He'll definitely play a role, but it feels like he'll still be more of a secondary role as opposed to a featured role. So all great calls for late-round picks, but my two favorites would be Miller and McLaughlin.
Have we talked about Antonio Gibson and what it means for Ramondre Stevenson?
Not really.
Yeah, right. I probably missed. That's a miss on my part. What do you think it means?
I don't know. Like, I made a big deal going into last year about how inefficient Stevenson was as a pass catcher. But that's also been the way that he's had fantasy value. So if I had a fear, it would be that he's going to play more on early downs and have more rush attempts, and Gibson's going to have more catches. But I think this is probably a situation where it's a competition with Stevenson having the edge going into camp.
All right, more of Dave's.
For the job or the pass catching role?
What?
Competition for the job or pass catching role?
Pass catching role.
Gotcha.
All right, more of Dave's sleepers. Isaiah Likely is a sleeper. Anybody feel that? Does he need a... If you're looking at the list here, it's not including... Oh, there we go. On the bottom, you got the wide receivers and the tight end.
By the way, really good job of Thomas choosing which players to put on like the big letters and which players to put on the little letters. I think he did a good job.
He did. And little letters would include Quentin Johnston. No, I mean, I don't agree. Okay. I would have put
you big Trey Tucker guy?
No, I would have put Quentin Johnston ahead of Jalin Hyatt on the big letters sleepers list.
Well, no, he was trying to choose the guys we were going to talk more about, and so he had to put the Giants in the big letters.
Schaefer's the one who brought up the Giants today, not me. Quentin Johnston. Well, I just real quick question on Isaiah Likely. Does he have sleeper appeal without a Mark Andrews injury?
I think he does, given the construct of their receiving core right now and the fact that they've talked about using more two tight end sets. But, you know, how long will you carry him on your roster if he doesn't do anything in the early part of the season?
And then the wide receivers, Jahan Dotson, Michael Wilson. Wilson, we talked about last week. Jalin Hyatt, Wandale Robinson, Quentin Johnston, Kendrick Bourne, Trey Tucker.
I've got Bourne projected the highest of that group. I think that Wilson and Dotson are my favorites of that group.
Definitely agree with that. I'm curious to see what the Giants do at receiver, because clearly if they stick with Daniel Jones, they're definitely in play to take a wide receiver in the first round. Quentin Johnson obviously has the most upside, I think, of anybody here, given his draft pedigree and the situation for the Chargers right now. But they also should be in the market for a wide receiver. But based on what Jim Harbaugh was saying, you know, and the impact of the offensive line on his teams, that they could easily pivot, take an offensive lineman, say, this is the group we're going with, or add somebody on day two or day three. And then Quentin Johnson could be the number one receiver for Justin Herbert. So, you know, those are the type of guys you want to, you know, invest in, is high upside type of players. We talked about this. I think you asked us the question, and Heath answered appropriately, you know, with Josh Palmer versus Quentin Johnston. The floor is clearly safer for Josh Palmer based on what we've seen. The ceiling is much more in favor of Quentin Johnston. So with the receiving core looking like it is, you know, of the guys that Dave listed, and I agree with a lot of them, like I told you before the show, I would have taken some of these names myself, that Johnston is somebody you want to take a shot on, you know, almost like a poor man's Jameson Williams. And to say that is because Williams just hasn't done anything, but his situation feels a little bit better right now.
So then tell me why you would take Dotson and Wilson, Jahan Dotson and Michael Wilson, ahead of Quentin Johnston.
Well, I think in the case of Dotson, you know, you saw flashes of it in his rookie campaign, and the hope would be that the Washington offense is going to be a little bit better from a pass perspective than the Chargers offense. And so Cliff Kingsbury and a rookie quarterback coming in, even though Justin Herbert's much more established, you can make a case, I think, that Jahan Dotson can be better than what Quentin Johnston was, because he's already shown it, that he has the ability to do that. And then the case of Michael Wilson, I would actually rather take a chance on Quentin Johnston than I would Michael Wilson right now. But we get through the NFL draft, that might change. So if the Cardinals trade down, don't get a wide receiver of significance, Michael Wilson is going to have a huge opportunity, and rocket ships and all those fun things will be well attached to his name. So there's a lot to like about his situation as well. Can he stay healthy? That's a big question. But clearly there's a chance for him to be the number one receiver for Kyler Murray, which would be great.
Yeah. I don't know that I see a scenario where the Commanders have a better passing game than the Chargers.
System.
I mean, I get it. They're probably going to throw more, for sure. It could happen.
A lot more.
But,
and they have much better wide receivers right now. Like, my thing with Johnston is, like, he has the upside because of the pedigree, yes. But I also don't think he's any good.
Yeah, I know, right? That's kind of a wah, wah.
You hope better coaching, you know,
right?
And look, he's now, for today and for the next, you know, 20 plus days until the NFL draft, he's the number one guy for the Chargers. You know, who knows how much he's working out with Justin Herbert. You know, I hope those two guys have spent a lot of time together this offseason. I'll do a Google search when we're done, See if that's the case. But no matter what happens, he's going to be a big part of this passing attack. You know, whether he's the one or the two, I'd be very surprised if he drops down to the three. He's going to be a big piece. He's going to be on the field a lot. His snap count's going to increase. His targets are going to increase. And so can he become more than a body catcher? He was open a lot, and Justin Herbert was looking for him quite a bit after Keenan Allen got hurt, you know, and before his finger injury. But will he be able to overcome some of those rookie woes? You know, I hope that's the case, because there's a ton to like about him. But, you know, let's see how it all materializes.
We're talking about Quentin Johnston right now, and I just have to say, I do think, especially since this is a sleepers episode, you're just overlooking Josh Palmer a little bit here. I mean, I don't know that Quentin Johnston is the number one guy. I know that
when
Mike Williams got hurt, it was Josh Palmer, not Quentin Johnston, that stepped up into that role. So
right, but that's the thing. It's you're right. You know, in terms of who's designated the one who's going to maybe lead them in targets, it could still be Palmer. But, you know, as Heath said, like I talked about, there's not the same type of upside for those two guys.
No. All right, that's it for today's show. Thank you very much, Heath and Jamie, and thank you.
You want to talk about why Jalen Hyatt and Wandale Robinson?
I mean, I'm very interested to see what Robinson can do.
He's my favorite, yeah.
You know, he has been such a low A dot guy. It's like Rondale Moore-esque, but he's got a lot of yak ability, and he can get downfield. He did it in college. So I hope they use him a little bit differently. Hyatt, another guy, they have to use him differently. The thing with Hyatt is I cannot see him being a consistent guy that you can actually trust if the Giants draft a wide receiver, like a better than him. It's going to have to be, they take a quarterback in round one, they don't really invest in receiver, then maybe, because Hyatt can just beat people. He gets open, but it's always deep. It's always deep.
Right.
He's got a lot to
I offered Dan two trade offers last year in Baked Burger because I was in competition. I think I finished third, if I'm not mistaken, in the regular season. And my team was okay, but I needed some help. So I offered him two different trades, both for the same player. One was Wandale Robinson for Courtland Sutton, and one was Jameson Williams for Courtland Sutton. He said no to both of those. I'm thrilled to death that he did.
He regrets. And he regrets.
I think it was the Jameson Williams, if I'm not mistaken, had a like 30 plus yard touchdown run in the playoffs, right? It was against Tampa.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well, right after he scored.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Dan sent me a text message. I hate myself for not taking that trade.
Who would you guys rather have in a dynasty league, Jameson Williams or Wandale Robinson?
Jameson, for sure.
Jameson.
Wandale or Sutton? You'd rather have Wandale?
Probably Sutton for me.
It depends on your team. I think if you're win now, you'd rather have Sutton. I think if you're looking at who has more upside for the rest of their careers, you'd rather have Robinson. I mean, the idea of Jarrett Stidham to Courtland Sutton does not feel good. I mean, Sutton scored all 10 of his touchdowns with Russ and did really nothing without Russ.
Later, everybody. We'll talk to you on Wednesday with some breakouts. And before that, you will hear Heath's Dynasty Show on Tuesday. I think I got the order right this time. Until then, see you later.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina. Yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.